You're listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad, and 2025 marked a very big year in the Peterborough area because it was the bicentennial of the Peter Robinson migration. And that was where there was a planned migration under the direction of Peter Robinson that saw 2,024 Irish emigrants that made the trip across the Atlantic in 1825. And a new book produced by Nine Ships 1825 captures that not only many of the events and activities of the year, but also deeper conversations and the commemoration sparked, and how the community's understanding of its own history changed, broadened, and matured. And Elwood Jones is here with me. Elwood is involved with the Trent Valley Archives and very much part of the whole commemorative event. And would it be, in this scenario, Elwood, would you be the author, or were you one of the collaborative editors?
Well, I would say I was a collaborative editor. I was the one who came out with the idea that we needed to do a book like this. I said it was all very well. We wrote a book called Bicentennial Souvenir, which was sort of to hype up and get people interested in the events of the year. But then we had the events of the year, and I sort of said, well, now we're at the end here. We should be able to sort of say, did we do anything in the year that was anywhere close to what the souvenir was kind of promising, and did we learn anything that we didn't know at the start of the year? That was part of what my thinking was. I come at as a historian. I taught for 36 years at Trent University, so I've actually for most of those years had to deal with aspects of this particular historical event. So it to me, there was the two stories that I was interested in. One was the question of how the community got involved and the ways in which the various communities got involved. It was really quite amazing to see the different ones take up organization and work different kind of events. We did a bit of coordinating to make sure that there wasn't conflict, everybody doing the same thing on the same day. But for the most part, these were grassroots kind of organizations that went into that. But then the other side of the story is what is it that's distinctive about the Robinson emigration? And one of the things I thought first of all was that this is pre-famine migration. So this is what we had to effectively fight against. What the major Irish myth was that the diaspora is tied entirely with 1847. So now when you look at the combination of what does it mean that the diaspora actually began a whole generation earlier than that and did it with a different kind of initiative, a different kind of causation. So that was the story that I thought was the big story we had to deal with.
Likewise, unlike with the famine, because it was planned, and there were about 307 families landed into a region. There was a scattering or a spreading around, so it wasn't as if it wasn't a city. So when you talk in terms of how different communities were going to handle this, 307 families that were given land over a wide area developed into distinctive communities.
Yeah, they also relate to each other in an interesting way, that Peterborough effectively was founded by this migration coming through here. The name Peterborough is also 200 years old. Named for Peterborough, New Hampshire, by the way. But anyway, so the story is one that wraps the two together. And it also goes for another kind of a story, because when you read stories about Irish immigration, the emphasis is always on cities. How Toronto changed after 1847, how Boston changed, how New York and Philadelphia changed. And so we have this kind of idea that the Irish migrants went for the cities. But here we have, none of them are in the city. They're in the countryside and loving the farming and enjoying the fact that the land is their own and that they can do what they like with it. And it's something they never had the pleasure of doing when they were in Ireland, even as a farmer.
And while that's the case in and around Peterborough, the same was actually true up the Ottawa Valley. So you had from the 1823 initial as distinct from being within the cities. And again, we're hearing when you talk in that context, like 1826 to 1832 was the Rideau Canal and before that the Lachine. But you're talking Montreal, you're talking Ottawa, you're talking the Trent-Severn. So you had migrant workers working as navvies as distinct from working the land, which are very different experiences.
Yeah, now it's also true that in the Robinson emigration, some of the people did drop off and work at the Lachine Canal, for example, because it was under it was a job that was around there. So there were ways to make money, and we know that some of that did take place. We also know that some of the ones coming from Peterborough opted to go back up to the Ottawa Valley because they had friends and relatives from the previous migration there. So it is that part of it is similar. But the interesting thing to me is that that this whole idea that whether Irish migrants could be farming people is something that's proved very dramatically here. These are good farmers, you know, and they, given the chance to do stuff, they really prospered.
And Elwood, as we said, you know, here you have 307 families that were given land. It wasn't, you know, if you give 307 people houses in a city, you create a ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
But if you scatter people over an area, as I said, you have different communities develop. And in those communities, you get different nuances. Would historically, when you look back, would you see different characteristics with some of the places like Truro or some of the other communities as they developed over the 200 years?
Well, it's an interesting point there. What I was thinking in terms of that, even though they were spread over a wide area, Peterborough was the center because that was the depot. This group, not only did the government pay for all their expenses for getting across the ocean, but they paid for a year after they were here, supplying them with supplies and that. So that meant that keeping a connection with what became Peterborough was the important thing. So you might say that sub-communities did develop, especially after the churches were built in the rural area. For a long time, the only Roman Catholic parish was in Peterborough. And so these people, you know, maybe 20 or 30 miles away, would find ways to get to church, at least occasionally, by going there. So the parish was quite large. But once we developed like parishes like Enduro in the 1840s and 50s, and then Downeyville, again around the same kind of period, it's really into the next period that we start to do that. So in a way, it's well, let's say that the time was not as essential as a thing back then, that people could take their time and be patient and know that in the fullness of time that these kind of things would take place, and that if they wanted to make an extra effort, they could. So Peterborough, in a way, was defined by this. Peterborough became the administrative center. And something that's interesting to say, Peterborough was never a village. It was a town right from the start. The government treated it as the same as they would Cornwall, Kingston, Toronto, and London. And so what happened is that when Peter Robinson arrived in Peterborough, the surveyors were there laying out the town in at the very time they were there, and they included the first burial ground that was there. And again, because it was set out as a town, it was all laid out within the area. The 1 acre lots were there for in the town, and then they had park lots, as they called them, that surrounded the area. So the idea was to visualize that the place would grow and be a town, and it had to have all the features of a town, which meant the position for military, position for an Anglican church, position for burial ground, and different things like this. So it's these things are happening simultaneously, sort of thing. And when you think of it that way, it's it's not surprising that we come through here. So that we had town lots and park lots. The town lots were 1 acre, the park lots were 10 acres. Well, the idea was they were considered to be equal value, but the hope was that people would make money by developing these things. So it was an interesting coincidence, and I'm always interested in how they chose Peterborough. It appears to be not the first choice. The original idea was that they would go to the Ottawa Valley where the others had been, but then there had been a problem in the Ottawa Valley with the older settlers who didn't like these newcomers coming in and who felt they'd been cheated a bit, because the new people got all the stuff for free, they didn't have it, sort of thing like that. So they decided to have to avoid that, so we do a sort of a leapfrog. Well, that caused all sorts of other kinds of issues. Peter Robinson had to find maps for the various area to make sure he knew where they were going. There were land claims in the area. You know, there were about 500 people besides the First Nations who lived in the area that they were going to, and they had to work around that. So this is a different kind of a problem that will come through there. And that's the thing that to me was the biggest thing out of this, was that Peter Robinson had to be extraordinarily flexible to work with the logistics they're involved in here. I know that Howard Pammit wrote his thesis years ago, and he said that Peter Robinson was a crummy leader because he didn't have good business and all that kind of stuff. But you think, in terms of this migration, we have to have the Navy working with supplying the ships to get us across. We have to have the military supplying the food and lodging that they need along the way. It's a 3-month trip to get from Cobh to Peterborough, as it turned out in this year, partly because they had to wait to stomp their feet for a month in Kingston while Peter Robinson was finding out the area that we were going to come to. Now, the area they came into, there were no roads. They had to come in by water. That only way could get to there. And then you have to sort of think, well, if you picked a place like Peterborough, it had been picked in 1818 as a future site for a town because it's an unusual configuration. We have navigation that will get you to the place, but then we have rapids from what is now Lakefield down to Peterborough, 9 miles. They called it Long Rapids. The First Nations called it Nogajiwanong, because of this kind of thing. So this actually meant that you could do shipping below the town, but above the town was the power for the mills and lumber and all that kind of stuff came through here. So the town naturally kind of developed like that. So you have to say, isn't it an accident that they pick a place like this? This is an unusual combination.
Indeed. Over the period of time, as I mentioned, you know, the perception was that the Irish went to cities, and it's in cities you would have that tightness of community. But over the time, as in rural environments and rural locations, heritage, culture, and connectivity can dilute in a way that doesn't happen in cities. To the extent that over the 200 years, would you say that the Irish identity of the region would have been somewhat reduced, diluted in people's minds more than in reality?
Well, it's an interesting question, because I've actually wrestled about this. What we're seeing is that the Irish migrants in here maintained connections with culture and heritage and religion and music, all those kind of things over the 200 years. And much of it was, we discovered about the 1950s, noticeably, that a lot of it had remained across that period of time, that they passed from one generation to another. So the oral tradition was extraordinary. So there is a sense here where each of these rural communities is cohesive, and the cohesiveness is partly the Irishness that's holding it together. But on the other hand, when they sell their goods they have to engage with the wider community. And so there's the Canadian aspect that comes through here. And so we have a combination of both is showing up in here. And it's kind of interesting because the Irish culture is doesn't integrate into the wider one so broadly as you might expect. There's a sense that they can protect and keep what they have and preserve it. And that was a bit of a surprise to me. And it came from different directions. Like Alan Kirby has been working on doing this. Edith Folk went in the 1950s, tried to find out where the folk music was in Canada, because she'd been doing a program, and everything seemed to suggest that the Americans had all sorts of folk, Appalachian and all that kind of stuff. Where was the Canadian folk song? She found it here in Douro, and she drove in one day. She's a notorious driver, but she drove into the town store and said, does anybody here know any songs? And that was a revolutionary moment in the local community. And we do have the Leahy name is the big one that still continues to resonate out of this area. They do concerts cross country, you know. Mm-hmm. So good stuff.
Indeed. And then, Elwood, when you started to reflect on last year and all the events of last year and say, well, did we achieve what we set out to achieve? Would you say you were overachievers?
Well, yeah. The funny thing is that I didn't have ambitions about what we would achieve. My hope was that people would be better informed than they had been, and that they would do that. But what turned out happened, that especially that first week in August 1st to the 10th, it was just a real bang, 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 go kind of a time. And it's one of those memorable moments. It's like when the old days, you would have thought when the exhibition came to town or when the circus came to town, but the circus only came to town usually for a day or two. But this is 10 days that we had a diversity of stuff and brought people together in different ways. And we also found ways, thank goodness, one of the things that I learned, for example, in this year, I went and did a walking tour of Peterborough as it would have been in the time when Peter Robinson was here. Well, we had to do it in two parts. One, to get them from the place where they landed to get to the place where Peter Robinson had his headquarters. And then we had to do the other side. We came from the burial ground and that back to where Peter Robinson organized. And I said, well, you know, those people had to walk a long distance. You know, it's one thing to say we could go up by the river, we get to a landing spot. But once we're in the land spot, this is, again, another one of those special things about here. Peter Robinson went and said how lucky they were. They didn't have to cut down any trees in order to build all the stuff in the center here, sort of sandy plain. Well, this is, but walking that was, you know, we walked along the river and things like that. And you said, you know, this is, it's funny how you would, you sort of hit in your mind that is maybe a block or two of, is everything could be done, but this was stretched over about a mile. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. And then when you consider that they were really a walking people, pedestrian people, that it's true that we got as quickly as possible we get oxen and horses and things like this into the situation. But boy, you had to walk.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good thing.
And you would, in walking, you had very little carrying capacity also, so you know that everything was slower in every respect. The other thing that was memorable last year, I guess, was that the strength of relationship that was re-established and renewed with the Ballyhoura region, with people coming out from the Ballyhoura area to Peterborough, and then people from Peterborough heading over to Ireland and re-establishing those links.
Yeah, I think that was really very important, and it was interesting to see how it worked over a period of time. Some of it developed from, I know people on our board, Dennis and Mary, had been to Wicklow in 2013, And Dennis was surprised when he talked about the Peter Robinson immigration. It was as if this was a completely new name. You know, he was talking about people from outer space. And so this kind of sense of reminding people that this from this very area was where these people came from, and that they did it so many years before the famine. It just was quite amazing. But the but Amanda Slattery picked up on that, and Christy Roach particularly, and they worked very tirelessly on this, and both of them came to Peterborough during the this event, and some of our people went to Ireland. I didn't make it, but I had it on my agenda for a while. But it would be good to do. So that kind of fasting went very well, and Christy Roach went a book about where people came from, which is one of those interesting things, because and the book itself is really quite fascinating, because he uses two or three pictures to show that over the period of 200 years, the towns that they and the villages and the places they left from haven't changed all that much, you know, and that there's remnants that you can sort of, well, it's been a lot of change, but you can still catch the echoes from those earlier times. So I have a feeling now that the Epic Center and a few places like that will start to realize that there's a prehistory to the Irish history that needs to be surveyed quite a bit. And Christy Roach actually gave a talk at the Heritage Center during this 10 days we were doing, in which he talked about the history of Ballyhoura for 2,000, 3,000 years. He claimed at one point that the earliest manuscript document, paper document, surviving is actually from Ballyhoura area rather than from anywhere you might imagine, like Greece or Rome, if you don't say anything. So it was educational in different ways. You know, this the fascination to me, after even reflecting back on this, is the complexity. Everything is more complex than you might have imagined when you first start off. You think all you have to do is get some people on a ship, you know, but the stories are very curious. And then I sort of think that so many of the Robinson immigrants are intertwined over the course of time. I think, well, you know, it was 3 months they're together trying to get from, that's a long time for to set up a romance, you know, things like that. So there's so many different ways that you can pursue the story. And I think too, when you think about Peterborough as Canada's average city, you know, we used for surveys in the 1960s, 1970s, it all goes back to this Irish emigration that set the Peterborough area out as differently. It was the fact that we had Roman Catholics and Irish in the mix, which in the rest of the province only turns up in the Ottawa area or in the Windsor area. So it was quite interesting to see how the bigger picture is a complex one, and it sort of captures what Canada is all about and all sort of thing. I think I live in the average house in Canada.
So, Elwood, going forward, can you see now that there will be greater interest and enthusiasm for, be it an annual commemorative style few days?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm hoping that the book will inspire people to sort of realize that the story has so many avenues of possibilities here. But, you know, it took an awful lot of work to put together this for just the 1 week. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, like we're losing our annual exhibition here because of a variety of different reasons. But again, when you think about the number of people you need to make these kind of things work, I think that if we get to do something like this every 5 years, that might be doable. But once I don't know, maybe I'm worn out, but to me it's been taking about 3 years solid timing to produce that 1 year, and now we're still not out of it, eh? Because we had produced the book to come.
Indeed. And I know.
So I think 5 years might be doable, but I'm hoping that people now are more aware about about their history and about what's special about all these different communities that we have, and they've been able to preserve that specialness for 200 years. It's really great.
And I noticed I had the pleasure of going to Wild Irish Geese at the Fourth Line Theatre, and I noticed it's back being staged again, and a beautiful venue and a beautiful depiction of that period in history.
Yeah, it was well done. Megan Murphy was the author of that. She's direct descendant too from these Robinson.
Yes.
It's running through August. I'm going to go in August this year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Edward, we're going to have to wrap up. Thank you so much for taking the time. The book is Bicentennial Reflections, and you get details. I guess the TrentValleyArchives.com would be the best place, or nineships.com.
Yeah, both of those will work well. But over time, the plan is that Trent Valley Archives will be the place to sell the book. And the launch will be at Trent Valley Archives on the 6th of July.
Right.
And we're planning to have a little bit of Irish music on tap for that occasion as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure chatting, and congratulations on a fantastic piece of work.
Okay, thank you. I enjoyed it very much.